Good to see this fine number present. We're all wide awake, aren't we? I see some smiling, like as if they're not. One favorite device at this time of morning is to thump the mic if some are having a little trouble getting started. I hope I don't have to thump the mic. This particular phase of the study, you could go on and on and on, and we certainly can't do that. Really, an open forum type study would be good if such could be arranged at various places for problems in the home. But we'll try to do the best we can with the material at hand in the time slot that has been provided. And certainly we couldn't do an exhaustive study of this particular subject today or any other time in just one session. But our purpose will be to show that in the home there are a number of problems that arise throughout the marriage, and that they have to be dealt with, and they need to be solved in a way that is in harmony with God's will. One of the major problems in marriage is the religious question. It is strange that this question is up the line at the top. Most sociologists agree that this is so. It precedes race, nationality, ethnic background, economic status. And this shows us something about how serious this can be in a marriage situation. You might have a weak Christian married to a strong Christian, you'd have a problem. Sometimes we think if we have married in the Lord, married a member of the church, that this is a problem solver for all time. This certainly is not the case, as evidenced in recent times by the large number of members of the church who are having serious problems in the home when both are members of the church. And though it is highly desirable for both to be members of the church, and certainly we strongly advise this to be the case, it is not a cover-all and is not a sure-all that there will never be any problems if this is true, because it isn't going to happen that way. You might have a Christian married to a non-Christian, and certainly the non-Christian may be, as far as a person goes, honest, upright in many ways, and likable and congenial. There may be some areas of the marriage that are just what they need to be. But there will always be a cloud there that stands between them, where one is a member of the Lord's church and one is not a member of the Lord's church. And so, although we admit that a marriage is not unlawful when one is not a Christian and one is, it certainly does raise some serious questions as to the advisability of such. And in the case of the widow in 1 Corinthians 7:39, in a condition of present distress, Paul describes it in those terms. We certainly can realize that he is advising a widow to marry only in the Lord. I know this is the same expression used in Ephesians 6 when it says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord." And there may be some points of controversy here on the meaning of this term. But certainly we would all agree that it would mean to marry according to the principles of God, to marry in harmony with his will. And certainly, in the case of the widow here, I believe he is telling her, in this situation, that she should, if she is going to consider marriage again, that she should think of it in terms of a Christian. All right? That be as it may, and you may disagree somewhat on that. That's all right with me. But I do believe he's teaching the advisability of one marrying in the faith, another Christian, so to speak. To say the least, she would be unwise if she would ignore this divine recommendation. I would like to caution the young at this point along this line. And the time to caution the young is in courtship. That's when these things, you can do something about them. And I know that sometimes you say, well, I can't find anybody in the church that suits me. They may not excite you, some of them. They may not, as I say, turn you on. But other areas where you don't have as many churches as you do in this area, it's hard for some young people to even find another Christian, because a congregation may not have many young people, may not have but two or three. And there's not a variety there to pick from and to associate with. But that being the case, it is nevertheless highly desirable for young people to cultivate their friendships as much as possible among people who are of like precious faith, and at least give yourself a chance to find a Christian as your permanent companion. And courtship is the time to do that. Now, when you still have your head on straight is the time to think. Now, once you start holding hands and the tingles start running up your arm and your hair starts standing on end when you see the other one come in, it's too late to reason with you, because you cannot be reasoned with. Now, I've seen preachers, and I thought they were wasting their time. Here, a person's been going together, people been going together for a year or so, and then sit them down just a couple of nights before the wedding and teach them what marriage is all about. They're not going to pay any attention to what you're saying. They're going to do this because you want them to, and because Mom and Daddy strongly recommend it. And though there's nothing wrong with saying it, when you get moon-eyed and calf-struck, you're not going to listen to anything because you can't pay attention to it. You have gotten to the point where your emotions are highly elevated, and you're going to do this whether anybody says something on one side or the other of the question. You've already decided, and you've come to this point. So I'm saying the time to consider this is when you can think free of your emotions, and when you can really do this thing called reasoning. And let's face it, if a boy or a girl won't even come to services with you the whole time of your courtship, ask yourself this: are you willing to take the gamble that just as soon as you're married, that they're going to start coming with you? When asked to be hoped that they would, and as time goes on, sometimes that does change. But more often than not, it only becomes more so. And we need to stop and think if we want to put ourselves in that position. A woman marries a man, another member of the church, and he gets tight waddish about the car. And he doesn't want you to use the car, and he doesn't want you to put anything in the collection plate. And he's hostile about the members coming over to your house, and he doesn't want them intruding. You might have that situation. On the other hand, you find congenial people, not members of the church, that love to have company, make it quite easy for the believing companion to attend services and do not interfere, and sometimes can be constrained later on to obey the gospel. Certainly we would hope that that would be the case, but the thing you need to stop and think is, are you willing to gamble on that? See, what we're really talking about is a lifetime. And as we say, as we've heard it said so many times by older people, if you make your bed hard, you have to sleep in it. You're going to have to take the consequences of your decision. And if you make a bad one, you still have to deal with the consequences. You're still going to have to try to make that thing work. And it may work and it may not. And then later, when children enter the picture, then this complicates the matter as far as who's going to do what and who's going to take them to service. And if you want the family faith of a non-Christian, if he's a Baptist or a Methodist or something, if you want his family faith to come to the front, it may lie dormant at first. He may not pay any attention at first, and it may not matter to him what you do religiously, or her, as the case might be. But let the children come along, and then immediately you will see a change. They each begins privately to say, well, if a member of the church, I'm going to take them and teach them the truth. I'm going to teach them to become a true Christian. And the other one is saying, my mama and daddy were good people, and they raised me according to what they thought was right, and I'm going to take them with me to service. And then the other one says, no, I'm not going to agree to that. And I'm telling you, that's a strong friction area. And sometimes the little children get caught in the crossfire, and they don't know what to do. And I tell you what a lot of them do. They don't do anything. There have been many a child caught in the crossfire like that grew up and only bided his or her time until they could get away from home, and then they forgot all about religion, period. Now, they don't all do that, but there are so many cases of it that it demands strong consideration. So the religious problem is at the top of the list in the problems in the home. And the time to get that straight is before you marry. And the time to get it straight, go back a little further, it's better to do it before you get too far into a courtship. Think, reason, and pray that you will make a good decision. You see, it's for life. And that's a long time. And you don't want to make a bad bargain. Now, another area is in the realm of personality. Everybody's different. Wouldn't it be dull if everybody was alike? Personalities vary. Temperaments vary. And this is a strong friction area. It may be that people love each other fervently, but every once in a while they'll chew one another out and then make up. Maybe, hopefully. I've heard of some taking a good while to make up. I've heard one man would get into an argument and they would keep the thing going for a week. There was utter silence around the house for a week. That's a lot of silence. Well, what do you do? Are we going to have personality clashes? Absolutely. Does everybody have a temper? Honest engine now, don't you have one? I have. My wife has. She has some Irish background, and it gets up once in a while. And I've Anglo-Saxon background, but I I don't know whether I've got any Irish or not, but sometimes my wife thinks I have more than she has. Well, it's going to, every once in a while, you're going to flare off. It doesn't have to be serious, but it can be. And it just depends on our overall and overriding attitude in the matter as to whether it will be or not. Husbands and wives should seek to please each other, and that's what married love is all about. Each acting in the best interest of the other, and even so, there will be clashes over silly things. Most of the clashes are over trivial matters. I know of a couple where that the woman, when she gets her groceries out of the bag, she turns the cans bottom uppers in the pantry, puts them on the shelf bottom upper. It drives her husband up the wall, and he goes in there after her and he turns them back over. She goes back in there fully determined that this is her kitchen, and he will not enter her domain, and so it's a seesaw. I heard of a case where a fellow wouldn't pick up his socks in the room, and they left them in the middle of the floor for 2 months. Tis taint. Who's going to win this argument? Fellow and his wife got to arguing over something. It was a murder that had occurred. One said that the murderer used a knife, and the other said that the murderer used a pair of scissors. And they got to arguing about it, and they sat down at the table, and they finally forgot what the original thing was about, and one of them said it was a knife, and one of them said scissors. The other said knife. They finally got to where, when they want to argue about it, one of them say knife. And the woman would say scissors. Man say knife. She'd say scissors. He got tired of it, and he decided he was going to have the last word. So he took her for a boat ride one day out on the lake and shoved her over. And she couldn't swim, and as she went down the second time and came up for the third and last time, he leaned over the boat. He says, knife. And the last thing he saw as her hand disappeared under the water was. So sometimes it is... sometimes it's hard to get the last word, and everybody wants it, and you can't both have it. See, sometimes you need to take a walk, and one fella said that's one reason he was so healthy. He spent a lot of time outdoors. One fella said, when him and old Mary got married, he said that they reached a conclusion about what to do when they were mad with each other. And he said, it works real good. He said, when Mary wants to ride the high horse, he said, I just let her get up there and ride a while and don't say a word. He said, and then when she gets down, says, I climb up and I ride the high horse and she doesn't say anything. And he said, it works pretty good if you don't both try to get up there at the same time. So that's a little something there to think about. It may be a little homespun, but it has more truth in it than it has fiction. And of course, if you love one another, you're going to work these things out. And that's the basis of it all. Here's a person that's high strung, nervous, a nail biter, a pacer. And here's the other one that's calm and laid back. Cucumber, and it makes the other one mad that they can't be that way. How come you're so laid back? And the other one just sees everything's right, level. And the reason they liked each other was because they were opposites in that direction. You know, opposites attract sometimes and likes repel. And so you tend to select somebody who has a quality that you greatly admire. And vice versa. But sometimes it can be a friction area when you kind of want them to be like you are, and they won't be. And there you go. Here's a person that's steady and dependable. They're organized. Some people are just so organized that it's like a computer. And there are other people that are just at loose ends all the time. Just everything is unkept. Nothing is orderly. Everything is out of place. Sometimes you have a person that's shiftless and lazy. They don't care. And that just really drives the other one up the wall who wants to keep everything orderly. You have other problems like thrift. A person is thrifty and economical and tries to live within the budget. The other one tries to spend everything they get their hands on. Now, I'm here to tell you that's a friction there. It can be a big one. And here's a person who likes to talk a lot, and here's a person who likes to be silent. And invariably a man like that who's quiet will marry a woman who likes to talk. Or it might be the other way. And after a while, that gets to be a friction area, because they wonder, why don't you ever say anything? The other one wonders, why don't you ever be quiet? And you say, these are little things. Let me tell you, don't minimize that. It's the little things that mount up into a big problem. It's not the real biggies that cause the most trouble, because you'll concentrate on that and try to work that out. It's the little day-by-day nitty-gritty things that come up in the course of events. Husband comes home from work. His wife might come home too. They've each had a different situation where they work. The boss made one of them mad. Somebody took advantage of the other. This person was overbearing, and it got on their nerves, and they come home and they try to get it all together and try to get supper, and or you might call it dinner. That's all right, it's me. But try to get everything going around there when each has come in with a separate set of problems during the day, and one person wants to tell all of their problems, what went on, and the other one wants to check out time, doesn't want to talk about shop at all. See? And one says, well, at least you can do is listen to it and let me get this out of my system here at home. And the other says, I have enough of that at work, I don't want to hear it now. And so here you go. And sometimes there you go if you let the thing get out of hand. These are friction areas, and we're having to just kind of touch and go on these matters in order to cover a little more ground. But here is an area that is so important: taking each other for granted. Don't do that. Don't take each other for granted. This has led into a lot of divorces and separations, if not divorce. After several years of married life, that's something that we call settling down. Let me tell you something, folks. Don't ever try to lose that initial fervor and excitement in a godly marriage. Still try to make yourself exciting. Still look upon the other one as an exciting person. And put some fervor into it instead of just humdrum. Get humdrum. Oh, well, you know, and there's another day, another dollar. That kind of thing will kill anything. And taking one another for granted has caused many people to begin looking into areas where life is more exciting. We need to excite each other and make the marriage interesting. and make it something every day is a good experience, even if it's standing together during some serious crisis or problem. The standing together binds you together. It may be that children are acting up and you wonder, what are we going to do about it? They might be trying drugs, or they might be trying alcohol, or they might be experimenting with sex, and you wonder, what are we going to do about this? Husbands and wives who love one another have a platform to stand on while they are trying to work out these things and to help in the situation and to be strongly supportive and recognize their young people's problems, and while not condoning evil, try to let them know we understand. As we said to someone the other night, rapport is so important with your children. Can you talk to your children? Can you talk to each other? Or do you have to go down the street to get somebody you can talk to? Or do the children have to go to the high school counselor because they can't talk to mom and dad? See, this kind of thing. And taking one another for granted around the house is going to spill over into the children. If it's humdrum with mom and dad, it gets humdrum for them. And home is not a warm, friendly place. It's not a place where they look upon it as a refuge or an oasis, and from which they go and come into daily activities. A home ought to be a place where you can come back and you're just glad to walk in that door. It's just like you shut the world out and here's this big happy unit here. And we live together, and we fuss a little bit together, but not too seriously. And we love one another, and we're trying to make the best of everything and have a good outlook toward each other. It's so important that we do this. A lot of times when we take one another for granted, it very well can be mutual, that there's a little fault on both sides. As time goes on, a man may take less and less care of himself. I heard of a woman leaving a man because he stunk. I don't know any other way to say that so that it'll come across. Do we all understand what that means? He needed to go buy some roll-on or mash on, or squirt on, spray on. He needed to go take a bath more often. And okay, beards are in, but he could trim it. He doesn't need to have her wonder strongly at time if he has head lice because he's unkept, or whether there are really some maggots crawling around there somewhere because he's so uncouth, you see. On the other hand, it's rather discouraging for a man to come to the table to eat and there's these curlers. I have seen them as big around as a concentrated orange juice can. In fact, I think some of them roll the hair on them. And some of you ladies are indicating that that is indeed the truth. Well, here's a fellow, no wonder he holds the paper up high. It's a better view. See? And so sometimes we get into the scuff stage. We scuff. And this scuffing reflects something deeper within us. Scuffing is an attitude. Scuffing is associated with slovenliness, laziness, an oh well attitude, or I don't care really. And when you get into that kind of thing, you have some very serious problems. And they can be worked out. But how can we say more when the time is moving on so fast this morning? But I'm going to conclude and try to stay in the time slot with a brief touch here on the final point that we want to talk about today, and that's making a living. Now, we certainly know that this can be a friction area. 1 Timothy 5 teaches the man to provide for his own, and if he will not provide for his own, he's worse than an infidel. And so I believe that this shows it is the obligation of the man to see that the living is made. Now, she may join him in making it under certain circumstances that do not interfere with the marriage or the raising of the children. I fully believe that there are circumstances like that. But the Bible condemns laziness. A man that won't work ought not to eat, Paul said in 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10 to 12. We need to learn to live within our means, and that's where we all have problems. We know it's true, but we have difficulty with it. We want to spend more than we make, then wonder why we're in debt. We need to get our wants in harmony with our income. And this can make this area far less of an area of friction. Paul said in Philippians 4:6, "In nothing be anxious, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your request be known unto God." So we need to seek God's guidance in decisions, whatever they are, which would include our financial undertakings. And Philippians 4, 1 to 1, Paul said, 1:13, he says, "I have learned." And I think when he said, "I have learned," it means it's not an overnight process. "I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content." And he said, "I know how to be abased. I know how to abound." Paul said, "I know what poverty is. I know what it is to have a little more than you need." And he says, "In everything and all things I have learned the secret both to be filled and to be in want. I can do all things through him that strengtheneth me." So we can live within our incomes. One fella is always trying to keep up with the Joneses, and his boss wanted him to move into a most prestigious neighborhood where that it would be more in keeping with the company policy and visitation in the homes of his executives. And he said, "Why don't you move over there in that community, and we'll help you a little bit on that." And he says, "And keep up with the Joneses." He said, "Man, over there where I live, I am Jones." And a lot of times a person moves out of an area where he needs to be and where he's recognized and settled. He moves into a new area where nobody will ever accept him, and he will not accept anybody, and he's never happy, and he wonders why he doesn't go back over to the other place. And every once in a while he'd ride by there and look at that house with nostalgia. And so that's where we were happy. So keeping up with the Joneses is a problem. And then being content with what we have a hard job with that. Hebrews 13:5 says, "Be content with such things as we have." In Proverbs 15:16, "Better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled oxen hatred therewith." Proverbs 17:1, "Better is a dry morsel and quietness than a house full of sacrifice with strife." And if there's anything we can say amen to more fervently than that, I don't know what it would be. It's the truth. And then the desire for things, and it keeps us all busy, and everybody's working, and everybody comes in, and it's a hit and miss proposition, and never sit down together to eat, never have a family type situation around the table, and the prayers and the joining of hands as many people do these days when they do give thanks at the table. And a moment of togetherness. What a wonderful time that is. But our time is gone, and we want to say this, that a good thing to remember for Christians is this, in all of this, Matthew 6:33, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. And I believe this is the secret not only to a happy life and a happy spiritual life, but it is indeed the secret to a happy marriage. Time's gone, Weldon. I'll turn it back to you.